You just heard the opening of Giuseppe Verdi's early opera Macbeth, which is the subject of today's commentary. The opera is based on the Shakespeare play, and we're very fortunate to have with us today Barbara Gaines, the founder and artistic director of Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Barbara will be directing the production that opens the 2010-11 season of the Lyric Opera of Chicago. We also have Bill Mason, the general director of Lyric Opera, and myself, Nicholas Ivor Martin, Lyric's director of operations. EMI Classics has been kind enough to provide us with the excerpts, which are taken from their recording, and feature Cheryl Milnes as Macbeth, Fiorenza Cosotto as Lady Macbeth, Ruggero Raimondi as Banco, and Jose Carreras as Macduff. Riccardo Muti conducts the New Philharmonia Orchestra and the Ambrosian Opera Chorus. During his life, Verdi considered setting both Shakespeare's play Cymbeline and his King Lear, but he never got around to them. Macbeth was Verdi's first foray into Shakespeare.
I wish he had done Lear. I wish he had done Cymbeline.
I'm sure there's a lot of baritones wish he had done Lear.
Do you remember years ago I said we should have an opera from Cymbeline? I had no idea when I said that to you that Verdi was thinking about it.
I mean, the one they always talk about is the fact he wanted to do Lear, and had some very clear ideas apparently about what he would do with it, but it never happened. Maybe it's just as well. Maybe something like Lear is just so incredible a work to tackle, maybe it would not have been successful. But I think that if you look at the canon of Verdi Shakespeare, the Macbeth, Othello, and Falstaff, you're talking about some of the great works in the repertoire. And obviously, Verdi was passionate about Shakespeare, very familiar with it, and it's clear that he had a great love for it.
Do you find it odd that Verdi was so attracted to Shakespeare?
The two men had so much in common that it's not a surprise that Verdi felt such a kinship with Shakespeare. I mean, look, Shakespeare stole most of his plots. So, you know, that's not a big deal. So did almost all the playwrights of his day, and maybe all of us. You know, if you steal, you should just always steal the best ideas. But Verdi and Shakespeare are so similar in that character delineated the forward action of the play or the opera. And Shakespeare, with his words and with the behavior of the characters, are parallel to Verdi's music and the behavior of the singers. I mean, there's not a false note that I've ever heard within Verdi. There are confusing notes, but there's not a false note between the Macbeths in either the opera or the play, or in Othello, or in Falstaff. I mean, it's all true. So the two men, even though a few centuries apart, really shared part of their souls together.
Barbara, I know this is the first opera you will have directed. How do you prepare for something like this?
I prepared by running away from opera when I was a child. My grandmother actually had to drag me to the old Metropolitan Opera House. And thank God she did, because I actually had a good time, although I never admitted that to my grandmother. It was wonderful being at the old Met and then being at the new Met as a kid. Wonderful because I saw the possibilities, the kind of limitless possibilities of stagecraft, and certainly, you know, much grander than anything I'd seen on Broadway, without a doubt. So for my imagination, I mean, I couldn't even imagine at that time that I would be a director. So from those very early memories, but very deeply imprinted visually on me, when I realized it was going to be Tom playing Macbeth, and the first thing I did, actually, because I'm a very visual person, that's how what I remember. That's how I see things. I see images in my mind as if I were watching a film, you know? And so the first thing I did was I bought maybe 3 or 4 DVDs of other people's productions. One Tom was in, as a matter of fact, the one all in pink. I had a wonderful time with that. I thought that was great, although I hear it didn't do well, but I loved it. I loved it because it broke all sorts of barriers of a conservative Macbeth where you just stood in one place and sang. So it was a very healthy thing for me to see because suddenly it was theater as well as opera. And I saw Phillida Lloyd's wonderful production and 2 others. So first of all, I just saw the possibilities visually. Then I set those aside because I didn't need to really remember or see them again. You sort of put them aside for a few months. And then what I did was I just listened to the CD. And I listened to each song for hours, really. I just stayed with one, just so I felt it. And when I felt it, I moved on. And I did that. That took a long time. I bet that took about 9 or 10 months. And after all that, I started speaking to designers. And for me, that's when a lot of magic happens, because I get a lot of my ideas listening, and then I get many more ideas talking. And by talking, everything bubbles up that's been unconscious within me. And I have great designers for this production, so they stimulated my imagination. And then I had a pleasure and an honor of working with Marina from the Lyric Opera, who worked on the libretto with me, because I really wanted to know what every word meant. And, you know, the librettos are translated in a very vague, general way. But if there was going to be a high C above, what would a high C be above?
Be above a high B.
Yeah. Okay, a high C above a high B. I wanted to know, well, what was that word? What was that word? What syllable?
Why did he set that
text
that way?
Was it that
way?
Word? Yeah. And so she's helped me enormously there. And soon I'm going to be working with two of my very favorite Chicago actors. They're the two great actors in the United States, Kevin Goodall and Kate Fry, and the wonderful musical conductor, Doug Peck. And really, it will be the four of us in a room just going over the libretto and talking about what this means to the actors, talking about seeing them up on their feet as the music is playing. Doug Peck is a great Verdi lover, and I think that it's going to be the next part of it, the physicalizing it with them. And then I'll be able to get two rehearsals here with all of our singers with a really, I think, an amazingly rich warehouse of human behavior. And we can pick and choose from what we want, what they feel comfortable with. We'll discover new things, I'm sure. But because it's my first opera, it's very important for me to be able to work and take a time to work on a measure of music. Whereas in the opera, we wouldn't have time to do that because the schedule is so quick. So really, this is my luxury, kind of a workshop for me privately.
I think the difficulty, any difficulty there is, well, you start off, obviously, with wonderful stories. As Barbara said, stories that maybe may have been purloined from someplace else. The difficulty is fashioning an opera out of it, because if you tried to sing the entire Macbeth text, you'd be talking about something as long as the Ring Cycle. So what you have to do in adapting any play, but particularly Shakespeare, that is so filled with scenes and characters, you've got to decide what to leave in and what to take out. And I think they did a masterful job in Macbeth.
They sure did. I actually prefer, you know, Shakespeare's very wordy. And we love him very much, but, you know, our attention spans in 2010 are a lot less, have a lot less perseverance than attention spans 400 to 500 years ago. And I think that Macbeth's story was improved by Verdi, because he just went like a laser beam to the important main plot issues. I mean, for me, between Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth, and what happens to their marriage and their lives because of one death.
Yeah, they got the nubbins of it. I mean, it's the Mr. and Mrs., and it's the chorus.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So you've lost scenes, you've lost characters, but you really are down to the essence of what the play is all about.
Right, and the characters, I mean, it's in Shakespeare, the wisest people in all throughout the canon of Shakespeare are the common man. Mm-hmm. It's the servants or the fools that speak the wisest things. It's certainly not the kings and the queens. And I think that Verdi certainly puts the wisdom of the ages in the witches, with the refugees, with the citizens of Scotland. I mean, they're the ones who are left with the mess of the politicians, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's a familiar theme.
You mentioned how important the language of the libretto is. Verdi is not the first composer to have set Shakespeare, but he had the disadvantage that his opera was in another language. When you really started diving into the libretto, did anything about Verdi's setting surprise you?
Well, I think what surprised me, only because, you know, never having worked in Italian before, how close to Shakespeare the score was written, and how so many of the words were similar. I mean, he did take a chunk of words from Shakespeare and elevated them with his music. Repetition. The repetition surprised me, because I've never really sat with an opera score before. As an actress, you know, I did a few musicals, so I've had librettos from Oklahoma, but this was really different. And of course, I believe that Verdi and Shakespeare, with them both, the reason why human beings repeat is because we need to repeat. I need this job. I really need this job. I gotta have this job. Our need is great. So instead of treating the repetitions in opera as, oh my God, what am I going to do with all these repetitions, which is how I begin, just so you know. I mean, I'm not above that. Mm. I try, and especially with Harrison McEldowney, who's my choreographer, we really work on what is the emotional, behavioral reason that this chorus needs to repeat itself. How does it change? How does their intent change? How does it grow or diminish or whatever? And in that way, that will tell me what to do with them. But you're always asking questions, and I don't have all the answers at this moment.
I think sometimes, obviously, in opera, words are repeated just for comprehensibility in the public, particularly, you know, if you're talking about it, even though the theaters weren't that big at that time. But just something needs to be repeated for the audience to get it. Mm-hmm. If they don't get it the first time, they hear it again. It's like the army way. You tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, then you tell them you told them. So they almost, certain things which are key need to be repeated a few times to make sure that the public has actually gotten it.
You know what? I agree with you. At meetings, too, it's important to repeat.
Yeah.
Like the Shakespeare play, the opera opens with Macbeth meeting the witches, who tell him he will be king. Only in the opera, it's not three witches, but a whole chorus. What do you think about that change?
Instead of using three singers, Verdi used a chorus because that was the tradition at the time. Operas opened up with choruses, whether it was the men's chorus, the women's chorus, or a combination thereof. That was kind of a standard tradition that Verdi was still following in this, his ninth opera. I mean, this represents his early period. And so pretty much everything up to that point did start with a chorus. And using a chorus instead of three singers allows for greater dynamic contrast. The pianissimos can be softer, and the fortes can be forte. So I think there's a lot of strong musical reasons for making the witches a chorus instead of three singers.
Right. Whether it's the three witches in the play or the, how many witches do we have? 32 witches?
Mm-hmm.
In
32.
The chorus, they are saying actually the same thing. The purpose of the witches is not to make either Macbeth, either the singer or the actor, to make him do something. The chorus acts as they're provocative. They are seducing because they know what touches us. They know what our weakness is. Mine is chocolate. Macbeth's is ambition. We all have our frailty. We are all frail, as Angelo says in Measure for Measure. And the witches merely tempt us with what we wish, but both Macbeths make decisions that they don't have to make. In other words, they both decide to kill Duncan. Maybe Duncan was going to have a heart attack. You see what I mean? There are many ways to become king. You could let nature take its course.
Yeah.
But no, the Macbeths don't let nature take its course. The Macbeths decide that they are well, if it's going to happen, it may as well happen now, while we're young enough to enjoy it.
And the witches you've got to assume they know Macbeth. They know that this prophecy that they're delivering unto him will be something that he himself will carry out. He's not going to wait for it just to happen.
That's exactly
He's
right. They know his weakness.
Yeah, they know his weakness. They probably heard of the misses also. So they know that this is going to happen.
You mentioned the misses. In the second scene, Macbeth rushes home to tell his wife about the witch's prophecy, and she does something remarkable. She convinces her husband to murder the king. Do you have any sympathy at all for her, and do you think the audience should?
No, I don't think the audience should be too sympathetic. On the other hand, you see, my problem is that I what frustrates the people that I work with regularly is that one of my strengths, which is also one of my weaknesses, is that I'm always – it's always easy for me to stand in the other person's shoes, which if you're – you know, it can be infuriating if you're – the people you work with want you to be angry at someone.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Macbeth, on the other hand, I despise her ambition. I have no patience for her ruthlessness, her how she treats her husband, how she in a way emotionally castrates him, dares him to be a man. To me, murder doesn't mean you're a man. I don't like her values. On the other hand, when I see her falling apart, I can't help but be touched by it.
Verdi said that the singer playing Lady Macbeth should be ugly and evil, but we have the lovely and charismatic Nadia Michael. So was Verdi wrong, or are we?
I asked Bill, you know, when we were talking about this project 3 years ago, I said I'd really like Tom Hampson to have someone that we can visualize him with, that they had a very passionate relationship, that they were incredibly tempestuously passionate for one another.
And that seemed that would appear to be a good reason for her to have the hold over him that she
exactly,
does.
Exactly. And I think she has that hold. Whether the marriage is alive or dead, as the curtain rises on this opera, she has power over him. And I think Tom would agree.
Yeah.
And Tom said to me at lunch.
Tom Hampson said,
she's evil. She is evil through and through. And it's impossible to argue with that. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Imagine we've all had close calls in our cars. You know, a child will run across the street or something will happen. And thank God we don't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
But we've all, after that moment, imagined what would my life be like if I had hurt somebody. And I don't think any of us could stand it.
No. And she doesn't stop
and
to think about it.
She doesn't stop to think about that. No. She is not what you call proactive regarding her, the karmic effect of her actions.
Macbeth murders Duncan, and the act ends with Macbeth and Banquo discovering the crime. Bill, I know you feel strongly about how Verdi handled this, particularly how the drama works in an operatic setting.
The musical aspects of the opera are, I think, how the music can, in some cases, amplify the text. I think that's the power of music, is to take text and bring it to another dimension. The example I specifically think of is after Duncan has been killed. In the play, I think it's Malcolm who rushes out and says, "Oh, horror, oh, horror, oh, horror." And it's powerful, but when you compare what Verdi can do with that wonderful chorus and the power when they talk about the gates of hell opening up, it's remarkable. There's certain things that music that can do, with all due respect to Shakespeare or any other playwright, great music can raise the level of great theater to a different level. That's what makes opera so compelling.
I totally agree.
Is that other dimension that it brings to it.
It's really hard to sit after a long day's work and listen to Shakespeare. It's just difficult because you have to think. In the opera, in ballet, quite frankly, because the music is so powerful, it's not so much about thinking as just feeling. And that it does take you away.
Let's listen to that chorus.